Alright. So this is some of the other work I'm doing with another student. Just like everyone who's network networking, you have to do some work on routing to add to this plethora of routing protocols. Ultimately, the goal of that work is to work on energy efficient routing protocols. And so as a starting point, we thought, well, let's look at what can we learn if we look at the energy consumption of some of these existing routing protocols. Now, we picked three, DSR, AODV, and TORA, mostly because we could get the simulation for them in NS2 already, so we didn't have to redo it. Also, as we heard yesterday, DSR and AODV at least are still at the stage that they hopefully get promoted to experimental status soon. TORA doesn't. We could have, well, but with that argument, we should have picked something like OLSR, but we picked those three as examples of protocols that have been developed that aren't necessarily or that aren't at all trying to minimize energy consumption, but by hopefully the idea was by looking at how they behave, we can learn something for designing our own protocol or protocol component, which coincidentally will be called PIES, not because it's a pie in the sky kind of idea, but it's an acronym for Protocol Independent Energy Savings, which is the long-term goal. So the motivation, well, we had this morning this good introduction to energy and efficiency, so I don't really have to repeat much of that other than saying energy, a lot of energy gets consumed in sending and receiving packets. Even worse so from one perspective is that even if you don't send and receive packets, if you have your wireless interface powered on, you're still consuming a whole lot of energy. And so one way to combat that problem is to put the interface into some low-power sleep mode. Now, low-power sleep modes certainly are nice from that perspective, but if you're in a sleep mode, you're not receiving much or sending much. So you have to do that very carefully. And certainly one of the tricks in designing energy-efficient protocols will be to understand when you can safely put mode nodes into sleep. All of the more advanced wireless technologies like 802.11 and Bluetooth provide for that, knowing that energy is an important consideration. But if you route through multiple intermediate nodes, of course, you have to understand when can you safely put nodes into that very low power state. So the goal of the work I'm going to talk about here was to say, well, how would existing protocols compare? And so if you then the first question is, well, what are your metrics? And again, we heard this morning a lot about that already as well. This summarizes a few metrics we took from other papers that have been published, and there's a variety, and they pretty much fall into these two categories that were mentioned this morning. You can either look at this from the perspective of an individual packet as it traverses from source to destination. You want to minimize the energy that gets consumed in that process. But you can also look at this from a more systems perspective or network perspective and look at, well, how long can you do the things you have to do until bad things start to happen? And the bad things would be that nodes are dying, and if sufficient nodes are dying, maybe your network partitions. And so there's things like minimizing the amount of energy you spend in doing things, or it could be other metrics like maximizing the useful life of your network, which were exactly the two things we heard about this morning. And we looked to some extent at both of them. So the first goal we looked at, or the first metric we looked at was, well, what's the total energy consumed in routing your packets? And then later we also looked at, well, how balanced is your energy consumption as a metric of, well, how likely is it that nodes start to die soon? In none of the experiments we did we actually exercise things to that extent that nodes would start dying and you might would have to find new routes, or if it's a sender or receiver that dies, then you have to somehow capture that too in your metric, because then you don't make use of the network that much anymore. Now, the one thing that I also added here and that I have to remind some of my students at least sometimes is that you have to, if you were just overly focused on reducing the energy consumption, then, and again, we heard that this morning, there's a trivial solution, just don't send anything. If you don't do anything, you're not consuming any energy, and it's a perfect protocol. It's not very useful, though, because you do actually want to send packets. So certainly you don't want to have a solution where you drop all packets. In a more subtle manner, what that means is clearly you have to also look at the efficiency of the protocol itself. So to measure that, we looked at packet delivery ratio. Certainly, well, we'll come back to that later because we will see an example of why this is important to look at. The other problem that we looked at and that we had to solve somehow as well, if you want to do these kind of studies, you need to have an energy model in your simulator. And the simulator we use is NS2. And this is a verbatim quote from the NS2 manual saying, well, that's the energy model they have. Now, you could either take one of two approaches. You could either say, well, that's a great energy model. Whoever put this together probably thought long and hard about this, and therefore it's appropriate to use it. And really what it says is, well, nodes have an initial amount of energy, and then every time you send or receive a packet over your physical link, you get hit with a penalty for that, and you have different penalties for sending and receiving. However, we didn't think that's a very good model, because for starters, it's a fixed amount. It's the penalty, the costs are fixed, and that means it's independent of the length of the packet, which isn't that realistic. It also, when we started looking at the measurements of real network interfaces, it seems to be that the type of packets you send seem to have an impact. Certainly depends also what level you look at, but the numbers I'll show you later says, well, if you receive a packet and discard it, that's different from receiving a packet and passing up the protocol stack. So this was not a very discriminating model, and to make things slightly worse, the default idle energy consumption in NS2 is zero, so you don't actually account for the non-trivial energy consumption that you have if you're not sending or receiving anything. So instead, what we decided to do is based on a paper published by Feeney, where they did some actual measurements of the energy consumption in 802.11 wireless cards. And there, roughly, the consumed energy per packet is a linear function, because all these parameters were derived by linear regression. So it's m times packet size plus b, and m and b are different empirical constants for different scenarios. So it says here in this table, for all you have for send, receive, broadcast, receive, promiscuous, and discard, you have slightly different m's and b's. So you have fixed costs. You also have certain costs per byte. And the idle power consumption is 0.8 watts. So these were the numbers we used. We actually changed in the energy model in NS2 to reflect that model. So to some extent, the results I'm going to talk about are very specific to that kind of wireless interface. However, if you believe that that's kind of typical for other interfaces, then maybe those results can be generalized. Now, whether that you can actually do that or not is somewhat questionable. I remember, was it last year at MobiCom in Rome, there was a tutorial on energy consumption, and the speaker there was claiming that there are radio technologies out there where, for example, receiving is more expensive than sending. In most models that I've seen, and certainly what's embedded in those numbers, is sending is more expensive than receiving. But he claimed there are new technologies that I'm not aware of where receiving would be more expensive than sending. So there are some limitations when you pick a specific model, but then if you believe that that's rather captures a lot of other models, and on top of that, it's a very popular type of wireless technology, then there's probably some validity to the results that you're going to generate. Now, in terms of the protocols, I already talked about the fact that we picked three. They are different enough to say, well, different protocols will probably result in slightly different energy consumptions. They're briefly summarized here, so I assume that most people are familiar, at least with AODV and DSR. We heard about them before. TORA had a slightly, well, half, I guess it's not, if it's a few periods, it's not that, but TORA as a protocol has a slightly different idea. It certainly, when you go, the description of the protocol is in the paper. I'm not going to go through it much here, but it has more control messages, and it has this idea that if links break and you do things in the structure you build, then you might actually find alternative routes. So you might not necessarily have a route discovery quite as often. As far as the simulation environment goes, I quoted here as the usual, because it is these parameters that you see in many other papers. The only difference is, well, we set an initial power to 1,000 joules because it's probably initial energy. I'm not an engineer. The idea was to set it at a high enough level so that you wouldn't run out of energy during the simulation. So you have 50 nodes in the 1500 by 300 meter area. You send 5 packets per second. That was probably a deviation from most of the others where you sent 4. There are half a K, you have 12 senders, a random waypoint model, and 600, some of the runs we had earlier were 900 seconds long, and we did a number of repetitions per scenario to get average values. We also, and in the paper it goes into more detail, we also looked at how the protocols operate and tried to predict which protocols would be more efficient or which protocols would be comparable, and based on analyzing how the protocols operate, we thought that, well, AODV and DSR should be relatively similar. I mean, they have this on-demand nature, they do route discovery, they do, when links break, they send the route errors back, they do another reply, route discovery cycle. So in general, we guessed it should be about equal, and Tora should be actually worse, it has more control messages, and we saw this analysis predicted that Tora would be worse. Well, we got the simulation results, and if you just look at the first table, then what you get is the one that's shown here, and actually that's contrary to what we had expected. Tora was a lot better. This is what the y-axis shows is the average energy per node that gets consumed in those simulations in a number of different scenarios, and there, the difference in the scenarios is the rate of mobility by increasing the pause time in steps of 100 from 100 to 500, where 600, since we only run it for 600, would have been a completely stationary environment. And Tora consumes quite a bit less energy. So at first sight, that was surprising until we looked at that other aspect, and that other aspect had to do with packet delivery ratio. Turned out in those simulations, Tora was delivering far fewer packets. Well, in that case, it's easy. It's exactly that little smiley point. If you're not trying really hard, then if you drop packets, you're retransmitting them a whole lot less. You're not going to get hit that much. So clearly, Tora didn't seem to behave well at all. I mean, if you look at the packet delivery ratios, it's like between 20 and 40% or so, even for pause times of 500 seconds. So kind of we discarded that in the first place and said, well, okay, really the only two you want to look at are DSR and AODV, because they give you high packet delivery ratios, and then they have comparable energy consumption. As I said, between those two protocols, what we looked at next is, well, what is the, how balanced is the energy consumption? Because one of those metrics that I think actually people will look more and more, and certainly more recent papers on energy efficient routing protocols have used that too, are things like network lifetime. How long do you have useful paths that you can use in that network? And so we looked at the difference between the node with the minimum energy at the end of the simulation and the node with the maximum energy at the end of the simulation. And if you plot this again for the different pause times, you get this graph here. And what it shows is, again, they're somewhat similar. There are differences in energy, and probably the more interesting or the most interesting thing of this graph is that the difference goes up as the mobility decreases. And that is, I think, an interesting point or point worth mentioning, because generally when you talk about ad hoc networks, people argue that mobility is a problem and you have to deal with the problem that mobility raises. Sometimes, though, mobility is helpful, because in this, what happens is, in the higher mobility cases, different nodes are used at different times to forward the packets, and so to some extent, if what you're really interested in is balancing the energy consumption, then you get everyone involved more equally. Versus if you had a fairly stationary network and you have these nodes kind of off in left field that don't get used at all to route packets, well, they're going to consume all their energy and some other poor nodes get hit. So for some scenarios, mobility is not the problem. Sometimes it can be very helpful. We've seen that in one other study, by the way, where we looked at protocols that tried to maximize the capacity of the network. So unlike protocols like DSR, where you take the shortest path, or AODV, where you take the shortest path, and chances are it kind of goes through the center of the network all the time, maybe you can try to find paths that allow you to have multiple simultaneous transmissions so you get more capacity. And again, we found a similar effect that if you have high mobility, to some extent it helps you balance the load better and you get better overall capacity. So for energy consumption, if you're interested in the balance, then mobility helps, but it's even if you don't do anything else, you still have, I mean, not a perfect balance. And so one of the conclusions that we took away from that, and that will be one that is one of the design goals in PIES, is to deliberately try to achieve a fairly balanced energy consumption. You do not want to hit nodes that are already low in power with the task of routing additional packets. We believe that's going to be in the long run counterintuitive. If you force nodes to die, then the network is more likely it's going to suffer, because if you have fewer nodes, you have fewer density of your nodes in your area, the routes will become longer. So it's going to be in the long run more expensive to deliver the remaining packets, and the network is more likely to partition. The other thing is this question, or the other conclusion that we took away from that study and the results was, well, does idle energy actually matter? I mean, yes, there is this, if you looked at the initial NS2 energy model, I said, well, we set that to zero. And so given that we had this model, we could play around with it, we said, well, let's set the idle energy consumption to zero, let's set it to this number we got from that empirical study, and then run it and look at what is the average energy consumed. And it turns out that indeed the idle energy matters a whole lot. This is for one specific pause time, but the results are pretty much the same across all the pause times. If you turn idle energy off and you just look at the energy that gets consumed in sending and receiving packets, and then you wonder about how to optimize that, well, then you lose out on 50% of your space for optimization. The idle energy consumption makes up about half of the total energy consumption. So the other design goal in APIES is to figure out how to minimize the idle energy consumption by allowing nodes to go to sleep, but in a controlled manner. So in conclusion, by looking at this study, what we found is that we have AADV and DSR seem to be the only two choices, and TORA was clearly out of it. It was not that efficient. AODV had consumed slightly less energy than DSR, kind of an average, so in terms of the balance, DSR did better. And though coming back to a comment that was made yesterday about whether this is a fair comparison for DSR and AODV, since we measure the energy, since we do hit the data packets in DSR that are longer with more energy because it's times packet size, I do think this is going to be is one of the fair comparisons between AODV and DSR. We do account for the overhead in the data packets as well by the source route. So DSR seems to be slightly more balanced in the energy consumed based on this difference between min and max, but AODV on average seems to consume less. So the future, and idle energy is clearly an important component. It accounts for half the energy that's consumed during those simulations. So what the goal of PIES, this protocol independent energy savings module, is, and currently we're working on integrating that into, well, defining it, implementing it, and integrating it into DSR as the first protocol, is to come up with something that's both energy efficient and balanced. And also then once we have that and show that it's indeed protocol independent, that is, you can identify a component and integrate that maybe in slightly protocol-specific ways into different protocols, existing protocols that have not been designed to be routing efficient, energy efficient. So then and only then, once we got that done, then we'll compare it with routing protocols that have been designed from the ground up to be energy efficient, things like SPAN and other protocols that have been presented in the last, well, what would it be, year, 2 years. And that's, I think, yeah, that's pretty much